Blog Talk Radio.
This is Cody Diener, and you're listening to False Count Radio.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of False Count Radio. As always, I am your host, the Pacific Coast player, JT Evans, and my co-host, as always, the outsider, Andrew Krylock. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing tonight, JT?
I am doing wonderful. Actually, we are going to be doing a special interview here in just a second with the owner of the Fit Pit Pro Wrestling Academy out of Southern California. He is a former XPW superstar, as well as he has been seen on Wrestling Society X and in TNA Wrestling. Without further ado, let's welcome to the line Ryan Katz. How are you doing?
Doing excellent. What's up, JT? What's up, Andrew? How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing wonderful, man. Looking forward to the interview. Now, you just got done doing your own podcast, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I started doing this thing called the Off the Rope Slamcast over at HollywoodOutlaws.com. We do this every Wednesday. It's a video podcast. Every week, they seem to be changing the technology on us. So I'd say in the next few weeks, it'll be what it's supposed to be. It'll be a full-fledged, you know, video. I guess you'd call it a recap show, talking about wrestling.
That's awesome. It seems like a lot more workers are starting to get involved in the podcasting these days.
I think the way that the world has worked and social networking has worked, you got to do what you can to get out there and get the exposure and get your, you know, get your videos or your podcasts or whatever it is spreading out to the people. So everyone's trying to get in there just to give themselves a little bit more exposure, help them build a fan base so they can draw a little bit more money when they go wrestle on the scene.
Yeah, now I got to ask you, growing up, were you a wrestling fan, and was wrestling your first career choice, if not what was?
Oh, yeah, I mean, growing up, I was a huge wrestling fan. I mean, I got to say, since I was 2-3 years old, I don't know exactly, you know, when I got into it, but I, since being the littlest child I could remember, I always remember waking up Saturday and Sunday mornings, running into my parents' bedroom, jumping into bed to go watch the either AWA or NWA and go watch the Road Warriors. That was the team, Legion of Doom, Hawk and Animal, Precious Paul Ellering. That was the team that I was all about as a little kid.
Nice. Now, was wrestling your first career choice?
Oh, I mean, I don't know if I'd say it was my first career choice because being a smaller guy, I wasn't actually exposed to indie wrestling until after college. So I always thought I was way too small to get involved in the biz. So my first career choice of what I really ever wanted to do was become a game show host. I went to college, studied broadcast journalism with the intent to become a game show host. And it was then that I started doing my own wrestling radio show, and that's where I figured, you know, I may be too small to get in the ring, but I can, you know, get involved in the broadcasting side of wrestling, and then it became what I'd say my second career choice. And then from there I started training, and I jumped in the ring and learned about indie wrestling and learned that little guys could have an impact and make an impact and live their dream too, and it just kind of took off. So I wouldn't say it was number one career choice, but it was number two, only prefaced with the asterisk, that it wasn't number one just because I didn't think it was possible when I was younger.
Okay. Now, how did you come to work for XPW initially?
Back in, like, 1999, I was hosting that radio show out in Colorado I was talking about, and I had some guests on my show, and these guys were sending people out to Steve Kern's school in Florida doing some tryouts. So I spoke to them, brought them in, and we decided that it would be, you know, it would behoove all of us to create our own little Fed in school. So I started something out in Colorado back in 99. We did that for about a year and a half, and it kind of got as big as it was going to go. Me and my partners had some conflicting points of view. And at that point, I knew I had to go try to do something to make my career go to the next level. And XPW, which is one of those companies that had that exposure, and I really set my sights on pursuing them. Sending them promo packages, highlight reels, phone calls, follow-ups, and all of that. And I just kept bugging them until it was, you know, until it was a possibility and an actuality, and until they said, "Let's do it. You can be, you know, you can be a part of us."
Now, Ryan, the XPW locker room—it was known for quite a cast of characters. Can you talk a little bit about the atmosphere in the locker room there?
Man, the locker room at XPW was awesome, man. I mean, just the overall experience and ambiance of every single show we did, there was just an electric feeling that was going on. I mean, we had our crew that came up from, you know, that came down from the north. which consisted of Pogo the Clown and Vic Grimes and J.R. Benson and Ron Head and Steve Rosano. And these guys were just fun guys who liked to have a good time, liked to party, and they were just they were nice, fun, crazy, wild guys. And then we, and then you had the Sabus and the New Jacks and the Shane Douglases, I mean, who brought like some, who brought the stories and, and telling us stories constantly. But, I mean, it was always wild times at XPW. I mean, there was never a dull moment. Except for, a post-show, there would be the few hours of dullness when people were waiting to get paid. But other than that, man, XPW experience, especially when we were on the road, was a big, giant party.
Do you have any stories from being on the road with XPW you'd want to share?
Yeah, my favorite story was one of the times that we were in Philadelphia and, at the arena. And we were staying at one of the hotels. I can't remember what hotel it was, but I don't know. We probably had 12 hotel rooms on the particular floor, and everyone's partying. And I'm sure there was a lot of smoke filling the hallways, a lot of loud music, a lot of drunk dudes going up and down the halls. And we got word that the cops got called. So myself, Rob Black, Vic Grimes, Pogo the Clown, Super Crazy, Juventud Guerrero, Psychosis, and Damien 666 and Halloween, we all had to jump into this van and get the heck out of Dodge. I mean, and it was hysterical because we were running down the hallways, grabbed our stuff, jumped in there. I mean, we got a bunch of big guys and a bunch of, a bunch of the Mexican dudes, and we just piled in like 12 people deep into this little minivan just to get the heck out of Dodge so the cops wouldn't go after us. Good times at XPW, but those are the old days, man.
Definitely. Now, where did the GQ Money persona come from, and were you in favor of it?
The truth is, I never actually was a big fan of the name. It wasn't something I was so into. I thought it was a little bit too cliche, and I wasn't excited about it. Essentially, after I had had my initial talks with Kevin Kleinrock and Rob Black about me being brought in, I came out and visited for a show. I think it was the January show at Birmingham High School. I believe it was Payback is a Bitch. It's where Vic Grimes and New Jack kind of rekindled their feud. But anyways, I was sitting there in the crowd, like pre-show when I first got into town, and Lizzie Borden came up to me, and she just says to me as she comes up, and she's like, "Oh, you must be GQ Money." And at that point, I kind of gave a little smirk, a look of, I have no idea what she's talking about. But it was there that I was given my name. I mean, it was an unofficial introduction to what my gimmick and persona was going to be. So I was like, all right, it makes sense. I get why they wanted to call me that, because I was, they always saw me dressed in the suits or with the cuffs, with the cuff links and the, the white colored shirt with the white cuff collar and cuffs. So that I had that GQ Money vibe, but at the same time, I always just thought the name was a little bit too cliche.
Yeah. Now, any XPW, what were some of your favorite memories, and alternatively, some of your least favorite things in the promotion?
My favorite memories are definitely the big matches I was involved in. Me and Angel had a feud that was just awesome. I mean, and as a guy who got into wrestling at 5'5" tall and never thought he'd be able to go do a profile match or be in a main event or semi-main event, mine and Angel's match, the Raw Sewage match at Liberty or Death, was one of my greatest memories of all time. I mean, when I climbed the 30-foot tower and Angel came up climbing after, and I tried to pick him up on my shoulders for like a DVD, and he countered it and put me in a sidewalk slam. Sidewalk slammed me 30 feet off the tower into the kiddie pool of Raw Sewage as I watched the stars get further and further away in the sky, and as we crashed through the tables in the kiddie pool of sewage, and it went up my nose, and as disgusting as it was, and as much as I was ready to puke and felt like I was going to pass out from the stench, just hearing the 1,500, 1,700 people or so chanting the holy S, was just something that I will never forget and truthfully goes down as one of my favorite all-time memories in my entire, not just wrestling career, but my entire life.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Now, who's one person that you've really learned a lot from, like someone who was sort of a mentor to you in the wrestling business?
You know, there's one person through my history in XPW who I seem to learn a lot from, and it's a name that I don't know if people would expect me to say, and it's actually the Sandman. I mean, spending some time with him backstage and listening to his stories, and I had a couple of times, you know, I went on the road once where we were shooting some promos in Ohio with him and Supreme, and spending the night with him at the hotel, and then just when we do set design and setting up for shows, and he would always contribute. And he just, and even post-match, I remember post-match when Chaos wrestled Danny Doring. Sandman just always had a lot to say and always, you know, spewed forth a lot of knowledge. And I got to learn a ton. And actually, it was like 3-4 years ago at Cold Bay in Hell when XPW came back with their reunion that my wrestling, you know, knowledge or education took a whole new jumping level. And that was when he came back through the curtain after his match, and Sandman walks through the curtain and he's like, "That's the way you do it. Dropped an elbow and stole the whole show." And, you know, when you hear something like that and it really started to make sense of going, you know what, you don't have to do the crazy stuff to get the crowd to respond. And it is the use of psychology. And being a new school guy who came in with, like, a little flash and pizzazz and through the XPW style with extreme bumps, you know, I was one who definitely liked to shock and awe, so to speak. And then when I finally was able to get that realization that, you know, simpler works a lot better, I believe it's the most important knowledge I received. I received it from Sandman, and it's actually the knowledge that allowed me to come forth with my wrestling school and really create something I'm proud of and teach a way that's a little bit different than I necessarily learned.
I've actually been on the road with Sandman numerous times, so I know what you mean. Actually, I was at that Cold Bay and Hell event with him.
I mean, see, Sandman's a genius. That's the funny thing about it. You don't expect it out of this guy, but we can pull back some clips from the Big Vision footage when he did Ultimate Insiders, the last call at the bar, and he was talking about how this was years ago already, and this was before the big real estate market crash, and he's sitting there in a promo talking about how all the subprime mortgages are going to lead to a huge collapse in the system. This was about a year and a half before it happened. Who knew that Sandman was the prophetic, you know, profound master of knowledge in the wrestling biz?
Exactly. I know exactly what you mean. Now, I got to ask you, how did you get involved with Wrestling Society X initially, and whose idea was the Fabian Kaelin gimmick?
You know, Wrestling Society X had that natural tie to XPW. With it being a Kevin Klein product and Big Vision product, there was already, you know, I've been such a part of the family for so long with those guys that it was just, you know, naturally, it was naturally bound to happen that they'd come to me and ask me to be a part. As far as the character, you know, Kevin Kleinrock knew I had written a script a long time ago for a drama show, and in it, I had a character named Fabian Kaelin, and he was supposed to be this mysterious character that would never be seen. But Kevin said to me, "Hey, man, I like the name, and we want to do something with the character with you where you're going to be this wild ring announcer, circus barker, sideshow barker kind of guy." And eventually, as it develops and evolves into future seasons, it was going to be revealed that I was kind of a higher power and manipulating and promoting what was going on at WSX. So they thought naturally that the Fabian Kaelin name, based off of obviously the KZ-Feezy, or however you want to say it, any of those types of terms, you know, that they thought it was a good fit. It's one of those interesting things because I like the name, but it's a tough character to be associated with, and a tough name because, you know, I've had a different name and established a different name before, and then here I come popping in this name, and you know, it just did what it did, and it became a phase in my life, so to speak, of doing something a little bit, I guess, interesting. I mean, so many people disliked it that it's hard to look back at the Fabian Kaelin era and the WSX time I have mixed feelings about it because just the character itself, there was so many negative comments about what I did. And, you know, I think they were unjust comments because I was just doing my job and what was asked of me.
That makes a lot of sense. So you received a lot of flack then about it?
You know, when WSX first aired, I remember, you know, of course, being someone who – who's involved in the internet and likes to read the different things and the dirt sheets and boards, I'd go check out the reviews, and the first review I read that would say something about me running around the ring wild and annoying and this and that, and I was like, oh, this person didn't like me. And then I'd read the second and third reviews, and it was the kind of same thing, and then the fourth and fifth and the 30th and 40th, and everyone was just bashing me for yelling around and screaming and yelling and running and this and that. And it's like, you know, once again, it was what I was asked to do. It's the kind of thing that on set, any time my energy level dropped, I had the earpiece in my ear, and I had the MTV execs, the Big Vision execs, all of them just yelling at me to pick up the energy. You got to make it louder. You got to make it more hype. You got to turn it up. So I tried to give them what they wanted, and I did it to the best of my abilities. And when I watched it, I think I did a really good job. My big issue is I don't like the look of a lot of my costumes. But once again, I probably, that was a cause of my own. I had a big temper tantrum with the MTV people on the pilot because I was all decked out in the carnival circus style of dress. And then they wanted me to switch last minute to a very plain, just common look, and I wasn't too into it. And in the end, I wish I would have gotten to stay that way because it probably would have helped me a lot more in terms of my broadcasting career than dressing like a crazy freak with the eye makeup. But it was a good time, and I mean... the experience was awesome. The show was awesome. And it's just a shame that it got canceled.
What do you feel ultimately led to it being canceled?
MTV itself was going through a lot of crazy things and a lot of corporate changes. This was, you know, once again, the time is the world was going through changes in terms of business and the economy, that all the companies were doing their layoffs at the point that it was airing. I think it was like almost 1,000 employees or more than 1,000 employees were let go at MTV, like in the time leading up to the WSX premiere, and that included one of their entire marketing department at one point. So I think the show is just doomed from the beginning. There was also a change in terms of the executive vice president of programming. So when the new programming director essentially came through, WSX may not have been on their priority list where it was on the previous. So we kind of just got screwed and just lost in the shuffle.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, besides doing XPW and as well as the Wrestling Society X, you had a short run in TNA. What are your memories of that?
TNA wasn't my favorite time, and in fact, it was probably one of my least favorite times of my wrestling career. I relocated myself down to Nashville to try to make an opportunity happen down there, and it finally did. They brought me into a faction with Christopher Daniels, two other guys, Spider Nate Webb, and I don't know if I reveal the third name. It's always one of those others. I don't know if he likes to be revealed because he's normally a masked wrestler, but another current masked wrestler in the ROH scene, and they put us together in this faction. But they really never did anything to develop it, and it was really a shame because they didn't do anything in terms of characters or character names. We were just these cult followers and known as the followers of Christopher Daniels, and none of us had any identity, and they asked us to just stand there with our hands out and blank faces, and it was just really crazy and something that was doomed to fail from the beginning, especially because at that day and age in TNA, it seemed as if they would push people. But then the minute that those people started getting over with the crowd, they'd squash them so Jarrett can go get the main event and the main position. And it was just that it's the same thing that kind of happened. Like, previous to Christopher Daniels, it was a situation where Loki was getting over with the crowd, and then all of a sudden they squashed him to Jarrett. And then Daniels was getting over with the crowd, and they brought in the followers, and we started this thing up, and then they squashed him to Jarrett. And then Dutch Mantel came in as a booker, and he completely scrapped the followers. And after about 6 weeks on the weekly pay-per-views, it was all over for us, and we were never seen again. So I don't have fond memories down there. I wasn't paid very well. I can't say I was mistreated. I was treated fine. But I just remember, like, on my second show there, first show there, I'm walking around in the back, and with the reputation of me coming from XPW at that time, Bill Barron comes up to me, and he's just like, oh, Smiley, I hear you're taking a big bump tonight. And I look at him, and I'm like, I am? He's like, yeah, it's in the format. You're taking a big bump. So I go, and I find out, I go talk to the agents, or I think they even talked to Jarrett at that point because he was involved in the angle. And Jarrett's like, yeah, Smiley, we were hoping we could throw you off the balcony. And I was wondering if you'd do that without a table. And I looked at him like he was crazy. Like, you just throw me off a balcony, and you want me to land on the floor with no table. You got to be out of your mind. And I gave him this puzzled look of kind of like, I'm not really into that. I don't even have a character name. And then Nate Webb volunteered for the spot. And he, you know, I let him take the bump. And I don't know if they looked at me that I was soft or I was difficult or, you know, I was hard to deal with. But there was no chance I was going to let them throw me off of a balcony on my first or second appearance with no character name and no rhyme or reason for it to be done, just because they knew I had this reputation that I've taken some big bumps. I mean, when I took big bumps in XPW, it was in profile storylines, profile matches. I was paid well. It was in front of a great crowd, and there was a reason for me to be doing it. I just felt they were trying to take advantage of me just based on a reputation, and because of that, I just never can feel, you know, I just don't have a nice, fond place in my heart for TNA.
Now, did you get the chance to speak with Christopher Daniels a lot? Do you have any thoughts on Christopher Daniels?
Daniels is a great worker and a really nice guy. I mean, he's one of those guys who loves the business, is incredibly passionate about it, and continues to learn himself. He's the kind of guy who's going to go sit and listen to every veteran's story. Anyone who's got more experience than him, even people who have less experience, he's going to listen to their stories and you know, so that he can learn from their experiences and adapt them to how it's going to make him a better wrestler as a whole. He's a great guy and a great performer.
Now, did you have any interaction with Dixie Carter while in TNA? And if so, what are your feelings on her?
I didn't have too much interaction with Dixie. She kind of came in she came in and took over as I was kind of on my way out. So when Dutch came in, that was when Dixie kind of got hired, you know, brought in on a more prolific manner. You know, I'd met her, said hi to her, and this and that, but not too much. I do remember one of the times after I was on, after I was already off TNA, when I was in the crowd at one of the TNA events, and a bunch of fans came up and started asking me for autographs, and I just remember Dixie being like two rows behind me, talking to her people, like, who's that guy? Who's that guy? I did have an interaction with Dixie about a year ago at Bound for Glory when it was out here in L.A., because I was trying to get her hooked up with one of my students from my wrestling school. And she kind of faved my calls, wouldn't return my calls or messages. And, you know, my student ended up actually getting signed by WWE. He's under developmental right now down at FCW. But I went up to Dixie at the after party after Bound for Glory, introduced myself again, told her that I'd been trying to get a hold of her, get her in touch with the next big thing of wrestling. My man Kyle, 6'4", 275 pounds, former NFL, unbelievable physique. He's kind of a mixture of a Batista and a Randy Orton, with unbelievable athletic ability. I mean, he's just a superstar in the making. And I wanted to get them in touch, and I told Dixie that she dropped the ball because she didn't return my call. And you know, it was pretty fun to kind of go see her eyes bug out when I told her that she really did drop the ball. That she had, you know, could have had access to this unknown guy who no one's ever seen, who you really could build a company around, but she missed it because I wasn't a former WWE name or someone like that making the call.
Now, speaking of your school, what made you decide to start the Fit Pit?
You know, wrestling's something I'm passionate about and something I love, and they always tell you that, you know, you got to find the kind of work that you love so that it's not work. So that, you know, everyone tries to make a living at this wrestling game, and it's really difficult to do. So the best way for me to be able to do that was to go start a school and create a product, you know, and create a crew of guys who have a grasp and understanding of my philosophy of pro wrestling, which is a lot different than what a lot of the typical traditional trainers, you know, have a mindset for. I'm definitely what I call a new school mind and bring a new school approach. Is I'm not necessarily looking for a school that only caters to people who want to make wrestling their life and their career, and you know, and they live, sleep, drink it. I want to reach out to the guys who just love it and want to live the dream and have the opportunity and chance to just have fun and step through the ring and do what they've always wanted to do and never been able to do. I mean, you can grow up and you can get into any sport like basketball, baseball, football. You know, if you want to play it, you can go find a bunch of your friends, go out onto a field, and you can play the sport. Wrestling's one of those taboo things. You're not supposed to do that. It's dangerous. It becomes backyard wrestling. So I wanted to create a school that was a little friendlier, so to speak, a little bit more mainstream, and a little bit more open to developing something fun and exciting and something that people are passionate about going to every week, while at the same time reducing the risk of injury and trying to keep everyone safe. I mean, I'm proud to say that in about a year and a half now of us being open, we've only had one minor injury through the whole thing, you know, through our whole training time. And I am a firm believer it's because of my training style. I do things a little differently, as I was saying. And I really try to develop each guy to their utmost potential and take them to a level that they never thought where they can be. I mean, not just as a wrestler, but improving their overall self-esteem, their confidence, their pride in themselves. I mean, it's amazing for me to see the transformation that my guys have gone through, not just physically, but mentally and emotionally. I mean, I remember my original core guys coming in about a year and a half ago, and I see them now, and they're like new, they're just new men. I mean, they have so much more confidence than they ever had, and they have so much more just personality and charisma, because that's the other thing I do different. I focus on the character. I focus on the performance and the performer. So many other wrestling schools will teach you how to wrestle, but I teach you how to be a professional wrestler. I teach you how to be a larger-than-life, charisma-spewing, you know, action-doing, just larger-than-life superstar presence and persona. I mean, I have a WWE sports entertainment mentality, and that's the kind of wrestling I like to push and develop.
Certainly sounds like it gives you a lot of pride when you see one of your students succeed. Now, what other kind of values do you try to instill in your students that you didn't necessarily pick up during your own training?
Well, the one thing that so many wrestlers and wrestling trainers always say is that you got to respect the business. And I think that people say that blindly without knowing what it means, and I don't think it's an accurate statement or a teaching technique that should be taught. I think the truth is that the business doesn't respect most of its wrestlers, and thus you have to take advantage of the business. So you respect the people of the business, but you take advantage of the business. Respect the worker, take advantage of the business. You're in a business, and for that reason, you're there to make opportunities happen and make the most of those opportunities. So if you blindly respect the business, all that's going to happen is you're going to get taken advantage of for years and years and years of your career. If you can actually use the business and respect the people who are in it and treat the people with respect and thus get respect given to you, you're going to have a lot more successful career instead of just blindly sitting there and doing what's told. I mean, it may make you difficult. Some promoters may think that you're hard to deal with because you speak your mind. But the fact is, you're a human being before you're a professional wrestler. And the most important thing is being a respectful human being, carrying yourself with dignity, pride, self-respect, self-confidence, and walking around, you know, with your head held up high and not being a sleazebag or a dirtbag. I mean, there's so many wrestlers in the industry who have such low moral fiber and need to increase their moral mucil supplementation that it's the kind of thing that I'd rather my guys not make it in terms of becoming stars of the wrestling industry, but instead become better people and know that their wrestling training has something to do with making them a better person in the long run.
Now, how can listeners who are looking to be trained get in contact with you?
You can hit up the website at www.makemeaprowrestler.com. You can search for the Fit Pit Pro Wrestling School up on Facebook and check out the page there. There's always information about the events. And from there, there's a phone number that I don't know offhand memorized. The phone number's there. You can call in, leave a message. We'll get back to you and give you any information and more details that you're looking for. You could also send an email, and we get you started. I mean, it's the kind of thing that if you come in, you're going to love it. You're never going to want to stop, and it's truthfully going to be something that you'll cherish for the rest of your entire life. If you've ever had the dream, you got to take action and make action happen and make the call.
Sounds like a place that's very friendly to people that want to break in and not be pushed, you know, too hard.
I'm not out to kill people. I mean, the truth is we do work hard. You're going to get a hard, intense workout. You're just not going to get beat up. There's a difference. We're going to push you and physically take you to your limits and maybe even emotionally, but at the same time, I'm not going to do that by beating the ever-loving heck out of you where you're walking home every single night with bruises and, you know, and welts and chop marks. I mean, of course you're going to get your chops. It's part of wrestling.
but at the same time, I'm not out to kill people. I mean, we all like contact. We all like the contact. When you get into pro wrestling, you know what you're getting into, and you like the physicality of it. So I'm not saying you're not going to get chopped. You're going to have days where it's going to be tough, and you're going to get hit hard. But at the same time, it's not going to kill you. You're not going to walk out of there going, oh, I feel like crap. You're going to walk out of there going, I love this. I can't wait for my next training session.
Now, from the exposure you've gotten from the promotions you've worked for, you've gotten to do motion capture and voice work for WWE video games. How did you initially get set up with that?
Man, my girlfriend at the time, Lizzie Valentine, had applied, saw an ad online that they were looking for some motion capture actors for the game. And she applied, and I applied, and she got an audition, and I didn't. But I had taken her to the audition, and I was sitting in the lobby. And while sitting in the lobby, I started talking with the lady who was running, you know, the receptionist area about wrestling and about what was going on. And she looked at me, and she's like, well, you seem to know a lot about this wrestling. How come you're not auditioning? And I was like, well, they never called me back. I set my stuff in, but no one got back to me. And she looked, and she was like, oh, man, my husband's the director. Let me get you an audition. And she brought me in. I did a cold reading, and then they called me in for the gig. And it's been 6 years now that I've been doing it. And it's got to be my favorite gig I've ever done. I mean, the wrestling shows and the companies I've worked for have been awesome, but there's nothing cooler than putting on the mocap suit and the mocap balls to be, you know, to play WWE. I mean, I got to be Rey Mysterio in this last year's game that just came out, SmackDown vs. Raw 2011, or that's coming out, I guess. You know, I got to be Rey Mysterio and Teddy Long. I've been Rob Van Dam in the past games. I've been Mick Foley, Mankind in past games. So I've really gotten to do a lot of cool stuff, deliver the lines, do the script, and just be a part of, you know, making a video game. I mean, as a young guy or as a guy growing up, I mean, I'd say that's another one of those dreams of being a part of a video game. And in SmackDown vs. Raw 2006, when they wanted me to do voiceovers in my my voices in the game as one of the custom voices for the create a character mode, I mean, that was the coolest thing ever because I was able to go create myself, you know, on the looks. And then I'm playing with my voice where I'm just like, you know, Triple H, I don't like your attitude. I mean, it was a ton of fun. And on that same year, I got to go sit in on the voiceover sessions with guys like Stone Cold and John Cena. And I mean, it was awesome. And it continues to be awesome in each year, and hopefully again this year I'll get, you know, I'll be able to do it, but we'll see what happens. I mean, it really is the coolest gig.
Yeah, so you do get to interact with the guys that you were doing the voices of, though?
Generally, you record the voiceovers separately, but I was also working one of those years as a production coordinator on the game, so I did get to go do a lot of the voiceover session. You know, I essentially got to set up a lot of the travel for, you know, for the THQ and the Hydrogen Whiskey, who were the 3D design team. I got to do a lot of, you know, set up their travel, set up the recording studios, and then just make arrangements with the limos and all that for the superstars. So based on where the recordings were going on, I got to go sit in on the sessions.
That's really cool. Now, what's a rib or a road story you can share with our listeners?
Can you say that one more time? I'm sorry.
What's a rib or a road story you can share with our listeners?
Huh. You know, one road story, I don't know if you'd call it a rib. I mean, Vic Grimes always considers it a rib gone bad that really screwed him. I don't know if it really was a rib or if it was just an oversight on his mind. But one of the times when we were leaving Philadelphia after one of our shows, we're all getting ready to go on the plane, and Vic's going through security, and Vic got stopped by security, and he's like, I don't know why I'm being stopped. And they asked to search his bag, and they went through his bag, and all of a sudden they found that he had a butterfly knife on him. I don't know if it was a switchblade or a butterfly knife, but it was one of the two. Regardless, he had a knife, and he had an illegal knife at that on him. I think it was a switchblade. Cause, I mean, no, I don't know. I don't know which knife's illegal. But anyways, to make a long story short, Vic ended up having to stay, like, in jail. It was a holiday weekend, and he had to stay in jail in Philly for, like, 3-4 days until the holiday weekend ended, and he was able to, like, you know, be released and stuff. That he is to this day, I believe, convinced that someone put the knife in there as a joke just to fuck with him. And in the end, I mean, he served a little bit of time because of it. It's the good old wrestling ribs, man, the destructive ribs. It's so funny, isn't it?
It is. It's very funny. Now, what are some of your other business ventures that you can talk about?
Man, I do a lot of this and a lot of that. I do a lot of the DVD. I used to do all the DVD authoring and Blu-ray authoring for Big Vision Entertainment. So all of their wrestling releases and, like, even WSX, I was the one who actually made the DVDs. All the FIP titles that Big Vision was putting out, all the GLOW titles. I do all the authoring and menu design and stuff like that. I do that for other companies, for independent films, horror movies, and such like that. And then aside from that, man, I pursue a career of Hollywood entertainment, man. So it's just a little of this, a little of that. I've been trying to shop some television show ideas, written some scripts, and just trying to make some stuff happen out here in the, you know, in the city of Hollywood.
That's awesome. We here at False Count Radio want to wish you the best in all that, man.
I appreciate that, man. I appreciate it very much.
Now, go ahead and plug your website one more time and your school, and we'll go ahead and wrap it up if that's cool.
Awesome, man. Go check out the website, www.makemeaprowrestler.com. Each and every month, I'm doing what I can to expand it and take it to the next level. In fact, not this set of shows, but probably within the next set of shows we start promoting, we're going to start running some live webcasts of the events. Try that out. See if we can get some people outside of the Cali area to get into our product. Because this Sunday, September 26th, we got what's going to be an amazing show. It's the start of our three-show trilogy. We're calling it Hearts on Fire, where the Hobo is going to take on the punk rock powerhouse Brawlin' Bo Cooper for the Headblade-sponsored fur-lined Fit Pit Pro Championship belt. And it's going to be an amazing match and an amazing show that people don't want to see. Because also on that show, we got international wrestling superstar from AAA. We got Rocky Romero making his debut, not to mention the lovely, beautiful, and sexy Lizzie Valentine, plus all the Fit Pit regulars like Mario Banks, Cuba Castro, Haynes Classic, AC Spade, The Butcher, El Carnicero, and more. This is going to be a show that I'm excited about, and I can't wait to show people this version of a product that we created. I mean, it's a little bit out there. It's a little bit different. And it definitely focuses on story and character. There's going to be good wrestling, too. I'm not neglecting the fact that the wrestling will be good, but it's just so much more than that, and it's an entertainment extravaganza. So check that out. MakeMeAProWrestler.com for all the information. If you want to know what else I'm up to in my personal life, go check out my site at www.IamSmiley.com.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me on. You guys rock, and I appreciate it so much.
All right. Thank you very much. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back after this set of commercials, so stay tuned for more False Count Radio.
Hey, listen up. This is the Pitbull, the original Extreme Pitbull, and I advise you to tune in to WrestleHustle.com.
This is Brandon Fernandez. Both of y'all want to tune into False Count Radio. Listen to some good old things. Turn on the False Count Radio. That's great. Well, Brandon Fernandez here.
Hey, this is Brother D-Law from TNA Wrestling. And you know something? When you're out there and you're thinking about choosing a wrestling school that really benefits you, that you want to see progress, and at the end of the day, you're going to feel happy about what you're doing, well, Team 3D Academy is just the place. Team 3D Academy offers you everything that you could possibly want in a wrestling school. It offers you old school rules with the new school tools. Team 3D Academy will offer you the best there is in teaching how to do professional wrestling the right way, the way it should be taught. Team 3D Academy also gives you the knowledge of behind the scenes and how to take care of yourself, conduct yourself in and out of the ring. Team 3D Academy at team3dacademy.com. So if you've always been a wrestling fan all your life, and you've always said, I could do that, then you owe it to yourself to come on down and have Bubba Ray and ourselves train you. Train you in the way that professional wrestling should be taught the right way. Again, Team 3D Academy offers you a variety of things. Team 3D Academy will give you the knowledge that you need to make it in either TNA or WWE. Be sure to contact us. Be sure to make it happen for you. Testify.
All right, welcome back to False Count Radio. You just heard from Ryan Katz, and that was definitely a great interview. What did you think of that, JT?
Very insightful, lots of stories, and you know, it's always a pleasure to have Ryan on the broadcast.
Oh, yeah, definitely. He had some good stories, and you can just really tell how passionate he is about the Fitbit there. But I wanted to go ahead and get into a little bit of news here. Of course, the other day we were talking about Matt Hardy and, you know, his tweets on getting into Ring of Honor shape and things like that. Our friends at WrestlingRadio.com went ahead and posted today that there's a report that WWE has issued rules to all talent regarding the use of social networks such as Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, probably MySpace as well. Because of the Matt Hardy situation where he was using Twitter and YouTube pretty much to get himself over and get away from WWE, a lot of the big rule is that talent's not allowed to post videos that that are away from events, and they're only allowed to post videos that are produced and approved by WWE. They also have to have their personal social network account screened by WWE before being approved for use. So anything that makes them look bad, they're going to, you know, they're going to take disciplinary action. And, you know, definitely this is a result of the whole Matt Hardy situation. Do you have any thoughts on that, JT?
Honestly, if he's going to get fired, that's probably the smartest thing he could have done, though, is create a mass media attention to where he's going to have promoters wanting to book him because he's that hot on the news sites right now. But I kind of agree with WWE, but to a point, I don't think that they should be able to control their talent as much as they are with that. I mean, come on. Most of these guys had their fucking their Facebooks and their MySpaces before, you know, they even signed with WWE.
Right, and, you know, a lot of wrestlers will still take their they'll keep their, for instance, Facebook, a lot of the legitimate ones, they'll keep it very small and keep it for, you know, specifically for their personal, people that they personally know, as opposed to, you know, the ones that are a lot of times the posers, and they'll add, you know, everybody possible just to sort of get out there when, like I said, in reality they're pretty much posers there. I know we've seen a couple of those recently. Now, yeah. You know, I also wanted to hit on the fact that it appears there's a lot of reports out there that Mickey James has signed or later this week will be signing with TNA. And I know, JP, when a few months ago when we did our pay-per-view recap for, I think it was for Slammiversary, or whenever it was the event where the woman showed up on the motorcycle, we were speculating that was Mickey James.
Yeah, which it later turned out to be, obviously, Victoria again. But, you know, it's going to be nice seeing Mickey James back on TV. She's a good athlete, and you don't see that very much when it comes to female in the wrestling business right about now, at least on the main levels. So it's going to be nice seeing her back on TV, and hopefully TNA uses her right, because they don't use very many of their guys actually properly like they should. So you can only hope.
We go deeper into her and TNA, I did want to comment on something that she said earlier this week on her Twitter, and it was basically about the unification of the WWE Women's and Divas Championships, and pretty much she just sort of really didn't care. Basically, the end result is she didn't really care for the fact that they were combining the two titles, and you know my feeling on that is pretty much that if they were going to combine them, you know, that would be fine with me because that Divas title with the butterfly on it, that's only been around for a couple of years, which is actually the belt that they're using now. That WWE Women's Championship, pretty much any woman who's made her bones in the wrestling industry has held that title. Mickie James has held it. Victoria's held it. Trish Stratus has held it. Fabulous Moolah has held it. You know, Jackie Moore, pretty much every major woman star in the wrestling business, short of the, you know, the independent women that kind of stayed on the independent level, they've held that title belt.
Yeah, and, you know, it's very interesting on that level. But I did want to go ahead and plug a few of the upcoming shows, if that's cool. So why don't I go ahead? This coming Saturday, we're going to be joined at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time by World Wrestling Hall of Famer Wild Samoan Sika. On the 29th, we're going to be joined by wrestling veteran and California Pro Wrestling School owner, Rick the Equalizer Drazen. Rick has appeared on many TV shows for his wrestling school. He'll be joining us. On 10-2, we have a very old school. We are going way old and back in the day in legendary status as we interview Fritz von Goring. And then on the 6th of October, we have scheduled a very controversial interview. This man has been shooting as of late on the Shane Douglas, of course, franchise Shane Douglas, for his attitude and his antics back in XPW, as well as some of the new shit about, like, him calling out Ric Flair. Also, Luke is a trained stuntman. He's worked for XPW, WSX, and done some spot shows for WWE, and he's got a lot of stories to tell, so he's going to be joining us. So mark those dates down on your calendar. Definitely check out falsecountradio.com, where the schedule is listed on the homepage to the left under upcoming episodes. And, of course, you just got to continue checking out the Facebook page, which you can go to the search and find us on there. Andrew, go ahead.
Yeah, I also want to plug some of our friends there, Gimmicks Wrestling Tees. Fuck a sign, wear a T-shirt. Also want to plug our sister show, Wrestling Soup, every Thursday night at 11:15 on WrestlingSoup.com. Also want to plug WrestleHustle.com. K-Fig Collectibles on eBay. That's all that. Anything else we need to speak about here tonight, JT?
Not really. I mean, I think we had a great interview with him. And, of course, go ahead and check out his website. You want to plug that one more time?
Yeah, if you want to learn how to be a pro wrestler the right way, learn respect for the business, learn from the guys that have been to the top, simply visit www.makemeaprowrestler.com. Ryan Katz runs that school, and he'll definitely teach you the right way. And, you know, as he told us, he'll teach you not only become a professional wrestler, but he'll teach you to become an entertainer, a sports entertainer, which is, you know, pretty much the wrestling industry today. So, you know, you'll definitely learn the current landscape as opposed to a real old school, so you kind of get the full picture that way.
Oh, yeah, so definitely check out makingaprowrestler.com. I want to send a thanks out to Ryan Katz for joining us, and for everybody who listened, thank you very much. One last plug, check out youtube.com/pulsecountradio. We upload different interviews that we have conducted onto the YouTube, so definitely check that out. Once again, youtube.com/pulsecountradio. And send a special thanks out to all of our endorsers. And with that being said, fans, we'll see you this Saturday for a special interview with Wild Samoan Sika.
This is Cody Diener, and you're